is the end of Krishna's presentation on Ashtanga Yoga and the perfection achieved by the Ashtanga Yogi. But Arjuna found this process very unlikely to be of him, he thought, because he realized that it required very hard to achieve. So, at first he expressed some doubt that because of the nature of the mind, I don't think I would be able to do that. But did Krishna agree? No. Krishna actually said that no, it is possible to control the mind. You simply have to do what?
Practice.
Because the mind is a mechanical thing, and so we just have to practice and be very, very, very determined. And along with this, there has to be vairagya. There has to be detachment. So Krishna encouraged him. No, take it up. But still Arjuna was doubtful that am I ever going to succeed? So he inquired about the destiny, the destination of the unsuccessful yogi. How did he call this unsuccessful yogi? The yoga bhrashta. One who is deviated. To be deviated. One who becomes deviated. Who cannot fix the mind and become deviated. So who remembers what happens to the yogi who falls or who is unable to complete the process and achieve perfection? Okay, so we saw there were two types, right? One who falls after a short time or is not so advanced. So for him, the result of all his practice, because there was some material desire mixed with his practice, so he achieves swarga. And there, he fulfills his desires for enjoyment. And after that, he's given again a chance to take birth in a very easy, positive situation where he will somehow or other be able to continue with his practice. And what happens to the other type? He's born. He doesn't go to Swarga. He's born immediately. So that he can continue. So, in a family of transcendentalists, what is the advantage? He takes birth in a transcendentalist means very advanced. Father and mother, surrounded by knowledge from the time of his birth. What are some characteristics of such person that Krishna described? He is automatically attracted. Attracted to what? To devotional service or to the practice of yoga, but to transcendental things, and particularly what did Prabhupada explains?
Chanting.
What did that mean?
That he's fixed up in chanting.
Sorry? He will become someone who is fixed up. Yes, he will not just become just a new bhakta. Huh?
He will become
Yeah, because of his advancement, so he will become someone very prominent in the society of transcendentalists. He will become an acharya, yes?
And he will become very serious.
he'll become very serious. Yeah, we will study that today. He will be someone very serious because he already has a lot of spiritual sukriti from previous life, and also because he understands that I did not make it last time and why I didn't make it. There was lack of seriousness, there was lack of sincerity, there was lack of determination. So in this lifetime, he again endeavors very seriously. Prabhupada explained something very important. He will be attracted to spiritual life, but particularly he will be attracted to the primary principles of spiritual life. Yeah, not the rituals. He will not be attracted at all to the religiosity, to the principles of religiosity. And Krishna mentioned the name of Brahma Shabda. Brahma Shabda, which actually refers to the Vedas and all the scriptures of the Karma Kanda. So he will not be attracted to lower principles of religiosity. He will be attracted to the highest principles because he is on his last birth and he's searching for the highest. And the highest, of course, Srila Prabhupada indicated, this means he will be attracted to the chanting of the holy name ultimately. And we should understand that if someone is chanting the holy name at the level of nishta, being very fixed up, then this person must be someone who has practiced in previous life and who has returned to complete this incomplete task. What was the analogy of the riven cloud? What did it stand for? Right. So it was the symbolism of the fear of the danger to be successful, the danger of failure. There will be failure materially, and there might be failure spiritually. So one may not achieve anything, neither materially nor spiritually. But of course, Krishna is encouraging that it is not the case. There is no degradation for one who takes to spiritual life. There may be little reactions sometimes, but the consciousness will grow. And this is the main thing for a human being and for the living entity, is that we should progress spiritually, no matter what. So one who gives up material life to take up spiritual life is never at loss. Whatever time such person spends in the practice of spiritual life, that time goes to his eternal credit. And if one day somehow he stops his spiritual life, that credit is never diminished. It stays there. So we should never hesitate. As long as we can be engaged in spiritual life, we should always continue. And if one day we stop, then no problem. It is accumulated for next life or for later on in this life. So in this way, Arjuna or Krishna was encouraging the transcendentalist. Yes, Satchikumar?
In the 42nd verse, they said about the unsuccessful yogi, short practice, long practice, what is going to be next. But Krishna also says in the last sentence, certainly such a birth is rare in this world. So how do we understand that?
In 642. Certainly such a birth is rare in this world. This is particularly regarding birth in a family of transcendentalists. This is very rare. This means, you know, extreme good fortune. Yeah, what Prabhupada says, that this is very high family. usually one takes birth in Srimati Suchi families. And exceptionally, one takes birth in a family of transcendentalists. And this...
Also, Mataji, poor takes birth in Srimati or Brahmana or aristocratic family, even there also it's not that guaranteed that they will take devotional.
Yeah, we discussed that yesterday, that it is... It's always up to them. We said, like, rich family means all opportunity for sense gratification. But because of the previous, you know, sanskaras, spiritual sanskaras, and we also discussed yesterday that rich family here would rather mean rich and pious than just rich, like in some Western modern society, which is rich and sinful. This would rather mean rich and pious. But still, there is a danger of allurement. Yes. Short and long refers mostly to neophyte and how advanced the person is. Less advanced, more advanced. I don't know if you can really connect it to Yoga Rurukshu and Yoga Rudha, but more or less advanced, the neophyte, with the understanding that the neophyte will be more prone to return because of material desires. Therefore, he takes birth in a rich family. Therefore, he gets to Dwarka. Whereas the most advanced person, you know, he falls for some small thing, some small mistake, some pullings from previous life. Not that he's contemplating sense gratification, but somehow something happens. Or some ultimate last cleansing has to take place, the cleansing of the ego, like that. It's more subtle, anartha for someone who is more advanced. Yeah. Okay. So should we continue? We were in 45. We were in 44? Didn't we do that? Okay. Purva bhyasena teneva hriyate yavasho visaha jigyasurapi yogasya shabda brahma jivatate. By virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to the yogic principles even without seeking them. Such an inquisitive transcendentalist stands always above the ritualistic principles of the scriptures. I think we discussed this yesterday. Yeah, we were on 45. Yeah. Yeah, so the idea with this, we said that the conscious, due to the achievements of previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to yogic principles. And we can see that amongst the devotees, that some people who join the Hare Krishna movement, they have such a hard time getting into the whole practice. And some others, they like it from the beginning. It's easy. They have a tendency to get up early in the morning. They have a tendency to like japa. They have a tendency to like everything. Why is that? It's because there is achievement from previous life. So it is automatic. There is an attraction. And without seeking it, he doesn't have to make an effort. It's a nature. He has already developed a spiritual nature, and that spiritual nature follows him wherever he takes birth. So such person, it says, is a jigyasu. He inquires. He's always very inquisitive. He wants to know. He wants to know. And we will see in 45, jigyasu, he wants to know. And at some point, he comes to know, oh yes, this is this. Oh, I knew that before. He will come back to his knowledge. So, Prabhupada gives here this famous verse from Srimad Bhagavatam to illustrate the life of Haridas Thakur. Aho bata swapachoto gariyan yajjiva grevartate jnanatubhyam te pustapaste juhubu sasnuraria brahmanuchurnam bhrnanti yete. So this is what we discussed, that he becomes attracted to the highest features of spirituality. He just doesn't become a regular religious person who just goes to church or to the temple to pray for something mundane, who likes very much to do all kinds of ritualistic performances. He's not attracted to this. He is into internal development of the consciousness. He's someone who will, in this case here, because he was a meditator, so he was used to actually search for Krishna within. So he will continue to do that, and he will be detached from external performances of spiritual activities. But he will be very attached to such thing as the chanting of the holy name, becoming a devotee. We will study in the next few verses that ultimately one who keeps progressing life after life, he will become a devotee. This is the natural conclusion of the evolution of the consciousness, that one returns to one's original position. And we said that the one who chants Hare Krishna like Haridas Thakur, or maybe not as much as Haridas Thakur, but at least one who is completely fixed up in the chanting, then we should understand that such person is an advanced devotee. And that comes from previous life's achievements. So we should respect such persons. But we know also from the Nectar of Devotion that it's not always that someone becomes a devotee because of previous life's performance. It also depends on mercy. And if there is a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada who travels around over the earth, he can give that good fortune. The good fortune is either accumulated life after life after life by practice, or that good fortune can suddenly arise in one's life simply by the blessings of the pure devotee.
Prabhupada said that I am your good fortune.
Yes, Prabhupada said that in America to his devotees who could not, they said, Srimatam, Suchinam, Gehe. We didn't take birth in such families, Prabhupada. You know, they studied this and they said, Prabhupada, where did our good fortune come from? We cannot see that we are not yoga brashtas. Because yoga brashtas, they take birth in nice, pious families. And we were born in families of divorces and wine drunkards and this and meat eaters. And yet, we are chanting the holy name, which is the topmost spiritual practice, achieved after many, many, many births of austerity. So where is our good fortune? What is this? Prabhupada said, I created your good fortune. And there is also the point, Prabhupada also said in the case of his disciples, that Prabhupada also said that you were sent by my spiritual master. So that's another aspect, is that Prabhupada was to go to preach in America. The Sankirtan movement was to spread all over the world, and he was the person. And the plan was there, and it was planned by the acharyas. Generation after generation, they made that plan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent the first book in America. And there the message of Lord Chaitanya already reached at that time. So it may have seemed that it did not spread, but the book was there. The talk of Lord Chaitanya was in America. And ultimately Srila Prabhupada went to America. And he did not go alone. Some of his disciples, they had taken birth there. Just like when Krishna, in Janmashtami, we were studying this, the birth of Lord Krishna. How all the demigods took birth. When Krishna comes, all the demigods take birth. The eternal associates, they also appear. And all the most advanced transcendentalists, they all appear in that place where Krishna is going to appear to help him in his mission. So similarly, around the spiritual master, like there, when there is someone like Srila Prabhupada, who is going to make a very, you know, a big impact, a big work for the Guru Parampara, then along with him, some others are coming and they are positioned there. And Prabhupada comes and picks them up, wakes them up, and they start working for him. So Prabhupada said, "You are all sent by my Guru Maharaj." And because of that, in his humility, he sometimes praised almost bowed down to his disciples and considered them to be his guru. Because he said they were sent by Bhaktisiddhanta, so they are representatives of Bhaktisiddhanta to teach him and to help him. So there are different ways one becomes a devotee. Number 45, this is an important verse. This explains how the person who has taken his birth in a favorable condition now must take up again his endeavor for spiritual life. Because when we take birth, as you know very well, we forget everything. A small child, when we are children, we forget. We don't remember what we were doing in the previous life. So we also do not remember our knowledge. We do not remember our realizations in general from the very beginning. And there has to be a point of time when this knowledge is again awakened within our heart. Prayatnadyatamanastu yogi samshuddha kilbishaha aneka janma sansiddhastato yati paramgatim. Prayatnat, so this is, means by rigid practice, yatamana, by endeavoring. And when the yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor in making further progress, being washed of all contaminations, then ultimately achieving perfection after many, many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. So param gatim, the supreme goal, can be defined in different ways. In one sense, we can say it is the achievement of the Astanga yogi who manages to transfer himself either to the topmost planets of the universe where he will continue to practice and be liberated at the end of the universe, or param gatim also means that he finally becomes a devotee. Because paramgatim means to achieve the destination. And what is the destination? The destination is to be reinstituted in our original position. That is the destination. To rejoin our position at Krishna's lotus feet. And this happens when Krishna says, aneka janma sansiddhas. For those who are following this path, it happens after many, many births. Many births he has taken in the practice of karma, karma yoga, then he became a jnani, then he became an ashtangi, and many births of being an ashtangi, then finally he obtains perfection. He enters the spiritual world in his transcendental position. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that this requires becoming conscious of one's favorable condition. One takes birth and one is a child. What is a child? Agyan. One doesn't know anything anymore. And naturally, if one has taken birth in the family of a transcendentalist, the parents will be very expert at awakening the spiritual consciousness within the child. But at some point, the person himself has to become aware and conscious, self-conscious and conscious of the chance which is being again offered to make further progress. It's like we see in ISKCON, the children who take birth in the families of devotees, those who have taken birth from Prabhupada's disciples, and they are today, some of them are already 40. So they took birth, obviously, in a family where they have all chance to practice. And from the beginning, they have been singing, from the time they were children. They have been chanting the prayers. Their parents have forced them to chant some rounds. And they have done that by, we would say, for many of them, by external impetus. The parents have been pushing them, and the whole social structure has been pushing them. The environment has been pushing them. But there is a time in the life of each and every individual that we must become conscious, and we must consciously, personally, voluntarily decide, yes, now I will, of my own, from within, of my own inspiration, I will now practice this Krishna consciousness. And we can see that not everyone makes that choice. Some people do not make that choice. After some time, they leave. And it's not that they become non-devotees or something, but they do not do what is said here, prayatnat yatamanastu, that one has to take up again the endeavor to progress further. Because many people who take such birth, they are actually very comfortable because they are not worried. They have a certain level of spiritual understanding which is already there. So they are not too much worried about life, about death, about this. They are very comfortable. They are not regular karmis. But what about making further progress? So making further progress will require the determination, reawakening the desire, and understand, I used to be on this path before, and that's why I took birth in this family. And now what should I do? Should I that sit on my laurels? You know the laurels? In the West we have laurels. You know laurels? No laurels. Sit on the laurel means you have a glory from the past. There is some glory that is inherent to us from the past. So are we just going to sit on it and say, well, you know, I am a devotee from previous birth. Yeah, okay, fine. Are you going to become a better devotee now? Or are you just going to sleep on your glory? So this is the challenge that Krishna says, that you don't just take it for granted that you have a little spiritual consciousness. Yeah, you know. Yeah, I know better than others. Oh, I know this, I know that, I know this and that. But the one who is actually going to take advantage of this birth is the one who decides that I'm going now to grow further. Because the point is, why am I here? Why have I taken birth in this wonderful devotee family? Because I failed. This is the reason why I took birth here. Because in my previous life, I am a yoga brashta. I fell off the path. I could not fix my mind. And in order to fix my mind, and now my duty, if I want, it's my freedom. But what else? Krishna, he will say, you know, this is, you must do that. You're wasting your life if you do not try to, so one, to progress further. So Prabhupada says, he must become conscious of his favorable condition for executing yoga practice. And with determination, therefore, he begins his unfinished task. So this is when we actually decide, okay, because we always have to decide in each life, we have to decide, okay, I'm going to be a spiritualist again. Means again follow the austerities, again follow the rules and regulations. And why? Because there is still some contamination which is there. And that's why I came back. So now I have to get rid of that, of those last little things. Kilbishaha is called here. The sins have to be washed off. And once we have done that ultimate cleanup, then we will achieve perfection. Yeah? No, there are, you see, the laws of karma are very intricate. Very, very intricate. So sometimes the family can be pious and clean and poor. And sometimes the family can be, you know, just regular pious people, but there was a grandfather who was a saint. And the child takes birth there. And the only thing he knows from birth is that he had a grandfather who was a saint. So there are so many intricacies of karma and of birth. So in that case, so another combination is rich, but not very pious. And this will depend on the nature of the yogi and what kind of material desires he has and what kind of dirt is in the subtle body. So there are all kinds of combinations. But it is understood that the symptoms of piety are Janmeshwarya Shruta Shri Bhir. This is, Kunti Maharani is explaining that Janma means a birth in a good family. Good family means, you know, landowners or aristocratic, some culture is there, some high position in society, in some government or some, you know, so this is the janma, some aristocracy of some kind. So this is a good birth. Okay. Now, Aishwarya. Aishwarya means?
Money.
So where there is money, because we said yesterday you don't have to worry about day-to-day things, you can think about something else, you're free to go to India, you know. So Janmeya Aishwarya Shruta, educated, a family of intellectuals who think about life, about this, about that. That's also good birth. And yourself will have brain. Someone who takes birth with a lot of intelligence, but that's a blessing. So Janmaishvarya Shruta Shri. Shri. What is Shri? Beauty and health also. Shri also includes health. One who has a good body is healthy and beautiful. So these are the results of pious activities. And, you know, but there are other aspects also, you know, there are other qualities. But these are the results of pious activities. So we will take birth in a family and in a body that has this kind of things. Yes, that's what he said. He said they have Shri, They are beautiful. And in terms of Vedic stand, you know, beauty means different things, and fair also. Prabhupada liked the fair colors. Oh, they are very beautiful. So he considered them rich families and beautiful. Yeah. But Janma, that was not so good. Janma was, I mean, there were, like, we have Giriraj Maharaj, took birth in a kind of a high society, you know, and rich, you know. So there are many Prabhupada disciples who were coming from good families. And it's not that all the families in the West are asuras. Many of them are Christians and devoted Christians. So their knowledge is limited in terms of philosophical understanding, but they have heart for, they believe in one God, and which is Krishna, and they develop love for him. So it's yes. I remember when my father died. I was in France, and I didn't know what to do. My mother died. Yeah, my mother died. My mother died. So I was in France, and I didn't know what to do. I was just chanting, and the whole family was there. They're all non-devotees. So I called the group of devotees that my Sangha, the group of devotees I was always living with in Delhi. And I told them, my mother died. You do kirtan. I can't do kirtan. You do kirtan in Delhi. You know, you do kirtan for my mother. So they did. And when I came back after several months, actually, because I had to stay with her for a few months. So when I came back, I asked them, did you do kirtan for my mother? And they said, yes, you did. We do kirtan about your mother, memories of your mother. And they said, how did you do memories of my mother? You never met her. What did you do? No, they had a whole ceremony, you know, they had a puja, and they had devotees, nice devotees. They did kirtan, and then they spoke about my mother. And I said, how did you speak about my mother? And I remember it was Radharaman Swami, the Swami now, Radharaman Swami. And he said, well, we know you. So by thinking of you, we thought the mother must be like this, like this, like this, like that, like this, like that. What kind of mother could have produced this? So definitely the parents, our parents, parents of the devotees, they are also very fortunate. We should also understand, as Prahlad Maharaj Katha teaches us, that they are also on the line back to Godhead. Because we are devotees, and they grew us up. They gave us a body. They served us all the life. So they are serving us, and we are serving Guru. They are in the line. Alright, so we continue here. So Krishna has been explaining that there is no loss. Even if the yogi falls, there is all positive future. His path will never stop. He will continue. Now from 46-47, Krishna gives us his conclusion. And he's encouraging Arjun. He says two things. One thing is encouraging Arjun. So therefore, be a yogi. Don't be a bhogi. Don't just do this whimsical action. You know, don't just act according to your mind. You must be a yogi. See the wonderful outcome of being a yogi. You realize the Lord. And even if you fail, you know, you continue next life, you are protected, you never lose your human life, and so on. So he's encouraging him. And at the same time, he's also explaining that what kind of yogi you should be. Who is the highest yogi? So, the first verse, 46. Tapasvibhyo dhiko yogi jnanibhyo pimato dhika. Karmi bhyaschadiko yogi tasmad yogi bhavarjuna. So yogi Bhava, Arjuna, just become a yogi. A yogi is greater than the ascetic, the tapasvi, is greater than the empiricist, the jnani, and is greater than the fruitive worker, the karmi. Therefore, O Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. So what is he actually telling him? He says, please take up this path of yoga. Remember, he's in the middle of the battlefield, so he doesn't actually mean go to the forest. He means take up this path of yoga, which begins with Krishna. Begins with doing your duty. Take up this path of yoga, which begins with karma yoga. Because you practice karma yoga, devoid of the desire for the fruit, you will become purified and become a transcendentalist later. And then there will be samadhi. And you will obtain liberation from this material condition. So here, Srila Prabhupada explains this, that what does it mean? What is the meaning of yoga that Krishna says? Here, do not mistake, it doesn't mean that Ashtanga yogi is greater than Jnana yogi, greater than Karma yogi. That's not what he says here. He says the yogi, which includes the Karma yogi, Jnana yogi, Ashtanga yogi, Bhakti yogi, the one who takes up the path of linking oneself with the Supreme, completely rejecting whimsical, sinful life, that person is greater than an ascetic. So what is the ascetic? A tapasvi. Prabhupada says, asceticism without self-knowledge is imperfect. So he means somebody who is performing austerities in general, but not connected to the search for the absolute truth, not for the higher purport. People perform austerities for all kinds of reasons. One time we heard about the guy who jumped 500 times from the parachute, with the parachute, just to get into the Guinness Book of Records, and of course make a lot of money and become famous. So this is austerity, but it's useless because there is no atma-gyan. Without knowledge, self-knowledge means atma-gyan. So this is a yogi. Even if he is a karma yogi, he is much superior to someone who is capable of great asceticism. What is the use of great asceticism if the goal is not to rejoin Krishna? Empiric knowledge without surrender to the Supreme Lord is also imperfect. So, there are also people in this world who are jnanis, but they are not jnan yogis, they are jnanis. Just as there are karmis who have the tendency to work and enjoy, similarly there are jnanis who have the tendency to not work and just speculate. Speculate either mundane knowledge or some kind of phantasmagoria of spiritual knowledge. So, but they are not following any guru parampara. They are not under the shelter of any guru. So such persons are inferior to the yogi. And what to speak of the fruitive worker? Fruitive work without Krishna consciousness is a waste of time. So therefore, he says, the yogi is greater than the tapasvi. The tapasvi, it may be greater than the jnani, who is just a mental case. And the jnani is greater than the karmi, because the karmi is just involved with gross material energy, whereas the jnani is at least involved with subtle energy. So be a yogi. You should be a yogi. So Prabhupada tells us what is this definition of yoga here. When we speak of yoga, we refer to linking our consciousness with the Supreme Absolute Truth. Such a process is named differently by various practitioners in terms of the particular method adopted, but they are all yogis. When the linking process is predominantly in fruitive activities, it is called karma yoga. When it is predominantly empirical, it is called jnana yoga. And when it is predominantly in a devotional relationship with the Lord, it is called bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga or Krishna consciousness is the ultimate perfection of all yogas, as will be explained in the next verse. So whether we have a tendency to work, or we have a tendency to speculate, or we have a tendency to make austerities, we have to link all this with Krishna. Otherwise, it is all useless. There is no benefit. The Lord has confirmed hearing the superiority of yoga. So he's encouraging Arjuna, you take up this path of elevation. But now, which yoga should I practice, oh my Lord? So Krishna explains, who is the highest yogi? And we understand that the highest yogi, because yoga means to link with the Supreme. So the highest yogi will be the one who is the most perfectly linked with Krishna. Right? Yoga means to link. So the highest yoga is the process which provides the highest connection, the closest connection. This is the highest yoga. Yoginam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamo mataham. This is a memory verse for you. And this verse is actually describing the bhakta. The highest yogi is the bhakta, one who worships Krishna with faith and with mind fixed on him, attached to him. And we are going to hear of the greatness of the devotee. And of all yogis, the one with great faith who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me. He is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. Sa me mataha. This is my opinion. So what are the characteristics here of such person? First, he has great faith, shraddhavan. Shraddhavan. He has great faith. Faith in what? In Krishna. He has faith in Krishna. He has understood the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the person of God. So he has great faith in Krishna and in whom? What else? In devotional service. He has faith in the process of devotional service. Prabhupada adds something here. In what else he has to have faith as well? In the spiritual master. Yes. Yasya deve parabhaktir yatha deve tatha gurau tasyete katita ihartha prakashante mahatmanaha. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. So a person who has great faith in Krishna and in Guru. So that person, so this is one characteristic of the highest yogi. He's a faithful person. Number two, what does it say? Madgate nantaratmana. One who thinks of me within the inner self, the antakarana, within his mind, within his heart, within his consciousness, one who is absorbed in Krishna. He thinks of the Lord always. And which Lord does he think of? Shyam Sundar, yes. Meaning he's not thinking of the Paramatma here. That's what Krishna is trying to explain. Me. Because he explained it before. Me and the Paramatma, we are one. All the Paramatmas are one entity. And myself and the Paramatma, we are one. And one who thinks of me, one who thinks of me within his heart as Shyama Sundar. So the Shyama Sundar is the object of the dhyana, the object of meditation of the devotee. And Prabhupada introduces us here to the beauty of Krishna. He is beautifully colored as a cloud. He has a lotus-like face, which is as effulgent as the sun. A dress which is brilliant with jewels. And his body is covered with flower garlands. The Brahma Jyoti is the luster of his body. He incarnates in different forms, such as Rama, Narasimha, Varaha, and Krishna. And he descends like a human being as the son of Mother Yashoda. He is known as Krishna, Govinda, Vasudev. And this is the meditation of the yogi. It's not just that. The meditation of the yogi is the meditation on his relationship with that Shyama Sundar. He is the perfect child. He is the perfect husband. He is the perfect friend. He is the perfect master. He is full with all opulences and transcendental qualities. If one remains fully conscious of these features of the Lord, he is called the highest yogi. And does this, is that all what he does? He has faith and he thinks of Krishna within himself. He serves, bhajate. That is the most important word in this shloka, which actually indicates bhakti. Bhakti, bhaja. It comes from the same root in Sanskrit, which means to worship, but in the sense of serving. Not worshipping to get something, or worshipping because, some other reason, but to serve. And serve, why serve? Because there is nothing else possible. This is the constitutional position. So the ultimate yogi comes to this conclusion and accepts this conclusion that I am eternally Krishna's servant and therefore bhajate. And bhajate means also that the service is for the benefit of the other person. There is absolutely no, it's anya bilashita sunyam. There is no interest for material profit, Prabhupada says. There is no personal profit, no material profit. This is the highest yogi. But Prabhupada explains, the word bhajate is significant here. It indicates service. Bhajate has its root in the verb bhaj, which is used when there is need of service. The English word worship cannot be used in the same sense as bhaj. Worship means to adore or to show respect and honor to the worthy one. But service with love and faith is especially meant for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada explains, bhajanti is applicable to the Supreme Lord only, whereas the word worship can be applied to demigods or to any other common living entity. So this love and faith and service, this is only for Krishna. And this is our original position. Srila Prabhupada explains that bhakti is different in nature from the other yogas. Even though we call it bhakti yoga, so it seems to be yet another yoga, but it is different. Why? How is it different? Because? From the beginning we know the goal. What is that? Other processes are indirect. And Prabhupada refers to the ladder. Other processes are? Stepping stones. Towards the highest rank of the latter. The highest rank is bhakti, or full yoga. Prabhupada explains, the culmination of all kinds of yoga practices lies in bhakti yoga. All other yogas are but means to come to the point of bhakti in bhakti yoga. Yoga actually means bhakti yoga. All other yogas are progressions to the destination of bhakti yoga. From the beginning of karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga is a long way to self-realization. Karma yoga without fruitive results, meaning nishkam karma yoga, is the beginning of this path. When karma yoga increases in knowledge and renunciation, the stage is called Gyan Yoga. When Gyan Yoga increases in meditation on the Super Soul by different physical processes and the mind is on Him, it is called Ashtanga Yoga. And when one surpasses the Ashtanga Yoga and comes to the point of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, it is called Bhakti Yoga, the culmination. Factually, Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal. But this is important here. Yesterday, Rukmini was asking me somewhere, okay, why did Krishna describe all these things and make us confused? Why did he not just tell us about Bhakti Yoga? So Prabhupada explains here, factually, Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal. But to analyze, what we have done was actually an analysis. To analyze Bhakti Yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yogas. Because within Bhakti Yoga, everything else is included. There is karma, there is jnana, there is ashtanga we saw last few days. Different living entities? Yeah, also Prabhuji says that not everyone can accept Bhakti Yoga. It takes a special mercy, special good fortune to accept Bhakti Yoga. So the other paths are there for those who are not ready for Bhakti Yoga. Those who are in different modes of nature. If you have too much rajas, you go for karma yoga. And if you are higher in sattva gun, then maybe you can try for jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga. So the yogi who is progressive is therefore on the true path of eternal good fortune. So all these yogas are bona fide. It is the progressive path. One who sticks to a particular point and does not make further progress is called by that particular name. Karma yogi, jnana yogi, or dhyana yogi, raja yogi, hatha yogi, etc. If one is fortunate enough to come to the point of Bhakti Yoga, it is to be understood that he has surpassed all other yogas. So yuktatama. Yuktatama means most intimately, the topmost connection, the tightest connection we can have with the Supreme Absolute Truth. That is obtained through devotional service, in which we become actually an intimate friend of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, an intimate lover, or an intimate parent, or an intimate servant of the Personality of Godhead. This is how the soul can come close to God. Otherwise, the soul can never come close to God in terms of size. Understand? We can never become God. And we can never become as good as God, as great as God, but we can become very close to God. We can sit next to Him. We can have a heart relationship with Him. This is His mercy, that even though He is so great, He has relationship with us. All right. So after this, Krishna is going to continue to speak without even being prompted by Arjuna. Mm-hmm. And he is going to take us into this realm of bhakti, of what is bhakti yoga. What is bhakti yoga? Bhakti yoga means to know Krishna. Not the Paramatma, not the Brahman, to know Krishna and to know Him personally. So how can we know Krishna personally? Through devotional service. This is what Krishna is going to start explaining. And the fact that Arjuna didn't even ask about it, it also indicates that to access the path of bhakti is pure mercy. It descends upon a living entity when Krishna somehow bestows His causeless mercy, when He's pleased with us. At a certain junction of our history, by the mercy of a devotee, by the mercy of Krishna, we obtain devotional service. So this also marks a transition between the first six chapters and the next six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, that in the first six chapters, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, he explains, this is in the second paragraph, he says, in the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul. Where was this described?
Chapter 2.
Yes. Capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yogas. This is a summary of the first six chapters. At the end of the sixth chapter, it has been clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, madgatenantaratmana, that was what has been stated, the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the Absolute Truth completely, but not otherwise. So this was the conclusion of the first six chapters, that ultimately the mind should be fixed on Krishna Himself. Then Prabhupada explained that therefore, if one has understood the first six chapters and their conclusion, then one should begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the sixth chapter. we should concentrate the mind upon Krishna. This is what Krishna said. This is what you should do. You should take up the highest form of yoga, which is to concentrate your mind upon me with faith and with a service attitude. But how is this concentration of the mind going to happen? How is this going to happen? How are we going to be able to fix the mind on Krishna? So this is what Krishna is going to explain in this chapter 7. Prabhupada explains, concentration of the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in 9 different forms, of which Shravanam is the first and most important. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, Tat Shrinu, or hear from me. So this is how the seventh chapter begins. And the Lord starts explaining the process of Bhakti Yoga, beginning with hearing, Shravanam. This is how the mind is going to become fixed on Krishna. We have to hear. So we will hear about this further. This chapter is called Knowledge of the Absolute. In Sanskrit, it's called Vigyan Yoga. Or Gyan Vigyan Yoga. So it's about knowing Krishna. And particularly, it's about how to think of Krishna, because Matgatena Antaratmana. How to think of Krishna within this world, while we are here. Because this is our position here. And knowledge of the Absolute, that refers to knowledge of Krishna himself. It's not just knowledge about the soul. We are finished with that. We already have knowledge of the soul. Knowledge of the Absolute now is knowledge of Krishna. Krishna, his energies, how he interacts with his energies. And knowledge of the Absolute also means the process of bhakti. Because the Absolute, Krishna, is only known through devotional service. And this knowledge is even different from the knowledge of Brahman and the knowledge of Paramatma, which we got in previous chapters. So therefore, in these chapters 7 to 12, we will be described the process of Krishna consciousness or Bhakti Yoga. But we will see in the beginning that Krishna will continue the transition from Ashtanga to Bhakti. But he's taking us to bhakti. And the idea is that the Ashtanga yogi, as he understands that Krishna is the Paramatma, then he starts the process of bhakti. He starts hearing about Krishna, and he continues to practice his Ashtanga, and he starts hearing about Krishna. And as he hears and hears and hears about Krishna, he will develop attraction and taste. And he will come to the point, by hearing, he will clean whatever last traces of ego are there, and he will become ready for something which will be described in these chapters as ananya bhakti, or pure devotion, which is unmixed, jnana karma janavritam, unmixed with jnana, unmixed with karma, unmixed with yoga. This is the process of pure devotion. And that will be described, particularly starting from chapter 9. You had a question?
A devotee goes to Krishna Loka after hearing. What happens to the one who meditates on karma? If he is successful, where he goes? Or if he is unsuccessful, what is his destination?
Well, unsuccessful, we understood, he comes back and he continues to look for the destination. And successful, that is described in the Bhagavatam. Usually, Ashtanga yoga, that's why it takes a long time, because it involves not only long practice in the human body, but usually the Ashtanga yogis, the perfection that they achieve is to be able to leave their body at the time that they choose and to go to where they want to go. And where they want to go, it depends, first of all, on their credit, how much petrol they have, and it depends on their knowledge of the destination. So Krishna is saying that that the Ashtanga yogi, he should become my devotee, he should think of me, and when he leaves his body, he will come to me. But usually the Ashtanga yogis, it takes them more time than this. And most of them, they are elevated to the higher planets. They go all the way to Satyaloka, the planet of Lord Brahma. Most of the Ashtanga yogis, they end up in Janaloka and Satyaloka. So they go to those planets and they obtain a body which is highly purified. We heard last time how, well, I didn't speak, I was speaking in Mauritius, that the body of Lord Brahma is predominantly made of the element buddhi, intelligence. You know, so there is, it's not like us that our bodies, because this is the earthly sphere, so our bodies are made of earth, water, mostly water, earth, air. But on the higher planets, the higher you go, the more subtle the bodies are, and the more pure they are also. So the yogi gets a body which is already highly purified, and there he continues his practice. And if he's very fortunate, on the higher planets, there are pure devotees who are living there, who are preaching there. So he gets the guidance of devotees like the Kumaras, or people in the line of the Kumaras, of Narada Muni, who are preaching everywhere, and they especially preach in the higher planets where all these elevated transcendentalists end up. And they, again, depending, if they become devotees, they may achieve Vaikuntha Loka, and if they drag on a bit, then they have to wait until Lord Brahma ends his life. So they remain on the higher planets until the end of the universe. So it's a very long process. It's a very, very long process. But it is said also that some of them, they descend from Brahmaloka and they preach here. They also do that. They also become preachers. They also come down. Once they realize, you know, Krishna, then they also become great devotees and they become empowered preachers as well. So this is the thing, that he elevates himself and according to his power. Now some of them don't have enough power to go to Brahmaloka, so they may go to Swarga also, or they may go to Mahaloka, Tapaloka, Janaloka. And if they go to Mahaloka, then they'll have to elevate themselves, they'll have to take a bath again to elevate themselves to the next one, and then a next up, and next up. So usually the yogis, they take a long time, but they are very powerful. They become like devatas. They are deva rishis. They are deva rishis. Very powerful beings. But what's the use of being powerful and being in the material world? So this is their destination. You can read in the Bhagavatam how they elevate themselves gradually. Sorry? Which canto is that? Something is described in the second canto, in the third canto, 11th canto. In the second, third canto, you will see the elevation of the yogi. Yeah, they may go to higher planets. They'll transfer themselves by mystic yoga. And actually in the higher planets, everybody has those powers. So it's not that they'll be very special. they all have the mystic powers. Yeah.
You mentioned that in case, you know, they come in touch with a devotee, they can go to Vaikuntha Palace. Can also end up going to Goloka? Depends on.
They can take up bhakti at any time. Anyone can take up bhakti at any time, anywhere. Yeah. They don't have to come back here, in general. They don't really have to come back here. They can be elevated. Even from Swarga.
When I heard from Bhaktacharya Maharaj, he said, whoever goes to Vaikuntha, in order if they want to go to Goloka, they have to come to Vaikuntha. They cannot go from Vaikuntha to Goloka.
Well, so I don't know exactly, but the point is, the essential point is the mood, the bhava has to be developed. The proper bhava has to be developed. And that bhava, in general, it is developed by association. So in that sense, one has to get the association. That's why we say that when the devotee leaves his body, he doesn't go straight to Golok. He takes birth in the universe where Krishna is having his pastimes, and there he's trained up by the Nitya Parsadas, those who came from there. They train them. And then they get into the right mood to enter Krishna's pastimes in Golok. And Prabhupada says, I think, in even to go to Vaikuntha, some kind of, you know, it's not granted. It's not that much. You have to have that seva bhav. There is also training for that. Some paramparas are training one in that Vaikuntha bhav. Even the Ramanuja Sampradaya trains in that Vaikuntha bhav of worshipping Lakshmi Narayan with Aishwarya and with awe and reverence. So the training has to be there. That's the main feature for entering into these higher realms. Bhakti Charu Maharaj was explaining that based, I suppose, on the story of Gop Kumar. That's what happens with Gop Kumar. He goes up and down. And yeah. Yes. But for us, we should try to go as quick as possible. We read that yesterday, you were not here. Okay, so before we stop, I'll tell you about the different parts in chapter 7. Vijnana Yoga, how to think of Krishna within this world. So the contents, 1 to 7, is about Shravanam, knowing Krishna by hearing. Then 8 to 12 is learning to see Krishna in the material energy. So first we hear about him, and after hearing, we are able to see him in the material energy while still here. This is the path of bhakti, that you learn to see everything in connection with Krishna. Then 13 to 19, this is a little technical. Krishna explains the covering of the jiva's knowledge and how he becomes liberated. Then the next section is 20 to 25. And that, sorry for that, misplaced surrender. Remember, we had it already one time. Misplaced surrender. That some still do not surrender to Krishna. They go somewhere else. Guess where? So, And then the last part is 26 to 30. Freedom through knowledge of Krishna. So these are the contents. Srila Prabhupada also in his purport talks of the contents according to his vision. He says, in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, these are the contents. Number one, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. So, beginning with Shravanam, there is the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Then, how Krishna manifests his opulences, that's another thing Prabhupada says is there, which we have called, how Krishna is seen in the material energy. And then he says there is four kinds of fortunate souls and four kinds of unfortunate souls. This is what is described in this chapter according to Srila Prabhupada. So this this is a direct continuation from the verse 647. And after Prasadam, we'll continue studying that, how Krishna is actually explaining how we can fix our mind on him through the process of hearing and what we have to achieve in order to actually go back to him. We have to become attracted to him. You can divide it like this if you want, but the first part, 1, 2, 3, is more like how to receive the knowledge, and then the 4 to 7 is what is to be known. It's what is to be known. So it's then how to receive the knowledge and what is to be known. And then after that is how to see. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.